Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com. Or you can go to steinershow.org, click on their banner again. Baltimore's Credit Union, MeQ, MECU.com. We're going to talk in the beginning of this program about the tragedy that struck Wisconsin. I think it's important on numbers of levels to look at what happened there in terms of the violence that's stalking America. And I think that's something we really need to wrestle with, the extremism and even racism, I would add, that is part of all this. But also to understand what's happened to the Sikh community in this country. There have been reported since 9/11 over 700 attacks against Sikhs and the Sikh people in the Sikh community since 9/11. And we are joined here by Harjant Gill, who is an assistant professor of anthropology at Taos University and producer of a documentary entitled Roots of Love on Sikh Hair and Turbans. And Harjant, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Prabhjot Singh Kohli is with us. He is secretary of the Guru Nanak Foundation of America, the oldest and largest Sikh Gurudwara in America, which is a temple. We found him through our dear friends who own the Ambassador Restaurant, Keir and Singh, and his brother Binder. Mr. Kohli, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hello. Yes, I'm really happy to be here.
And David Weigel joins us, a Slate political reporter. David, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And it is Weigel, correct?
That's the one.
Gotcha. I don't want to say Weigel, but it's Weigel.
No, I would correct you loudly.
I'm sure you would.
Hold the receiver up to something hitting a loud noise.
410-319-8888. Well, let's talk about the political, before we talk about the political situation surrounding the Sikh community and what's happened here in the last 11 years. I think many Americans who are not Sikh have no idea who Sikhs are, what the culture is. There are reportedly 300,000 or 400,000 Sikhs living in the United States of America now. Let's just begin. And Mr. Kohli and then Harjant Gill, I mean, talk a bit about Sikh culture and who the Sikhs are.
The Sikhism actually came into existence in 1469 with the birth of Guru Nanak, who was our first teacher. He brought in the sensitivity that all human beings born of God, and they are all brothers, sisters. There should be no caste differences. There should be no birth differences, no caste, creed, color, and all that. And based on that, he advocated that to reach the God which dwells in every human being, one has to do three things. Number one is kirt karo, work hard. Then naam japo, that means you recite the name of the God all the time. And one chako, that means you should share your wealth with other people who are downtrodden and who need money. Based on this, this concept grew on, and ultimately was succeeded by 9 other gurus, means teachers, and ultimately it came into existence by the 10th guru, Guru Gobind Singh, who made into a martial race to protect the human beings, to protect the people, their basic human rights, and also to protect the people from the caste differentiations and fighting between themselves. So this is the basic concept. We are monotheists who believe in one God who is supreme. He has got no face. He has got no sex. He has got no identification. It can be a he. It can be a she. So based on that monotheism, we have developed into a religion where we believe that all people can partake in our religion. They can visit our places of worship. They can join us in all the community efforts. There's no distinction. Nobody is barred from coming to the Gurdwara. And the biggest thing, to equalize everybody, it was brought into a langar system, you know, which is a community kitchen. A community kitchen is after every ceremony, we sit together and eat together. So even the poorest people may be sitting in that line, and the richest people may be sitting in that line. So we do away with the caste system, which has been disintegrating the whole world as such. This is the basis of Sikhism.
Harjant.
Yes, just to add to that, to what Mr. Kohli has already said, you know, Sikhism is the fifth largest religion in the world. It has nearly 30 million followers around the world. And in the United States, there are about 500,000 practicing Sikhs. And majority of the Sikhs are concentrated in India, in Punjab region, which is where I do my work as anthropologist. The Sikhs who live in the United States, they don't necessarily all of them have the turban, although the hair and the turban is a very important part of Sikh culture and religion. And but a lot of men, including myself, I grew up in India, but I moved to the United States at an early young age. My dad had my hair cut because he was worried that I would face discrimination when I moved to the United States. So a lot of Sikhs do cut their hair, but turban is a very important part of Sikh religion and as well as culture. And what I would add to that is Sikhism is a very peaceful religion. It's a very open and loving religion. And what is really particularly sad about these attacks in Wisconsin is that these took place on Sunday, on the day of Langar, which is really open to the community for people to come, of regardless of your religious background, regardless of your caste, regardless of your any of your affiliations, you can come in and participate in this communal event of eating together, breaking bread together. And the Sunday services are generally a very open and inviting to all, and it is really unfortunate that this has happened on that day.
This is Anthony McCarthy. I've been reading over the last 24 hours about how connected this community is. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to ask you, how did you first hear about the attack in Wisconsin? And a lot of folks that I spoke to today trying to get research and get insight into this faith said that they know people in Wisconsin, that the community really is connected.
Mm-hmm. There is a large Sikh community all over the United States. I actually heard about the attacks or about the shootings. My partner called me and told me about them, and his family is from Wisconsin. So, but I think this doesn't come as a surprise. There's been violence against Sikhs and racial profiling against Sikhs that has been ongoing for a very long period of time, ever since 9/11. One of the first incidents of hate and violence was and of racial profiling was against a Sikh, Balbir Singh Sodhi, on September 15th of 2011. Very recently, last year in Elk Grove, California, there were two Sikh men, elderly Sikh men, who were gunned down. And it was not reported, or it was not at least registered by FBI as a hate crime. So even though this has been happening for a long time, and it is very sad and tragic, our community is not surprised by it, because I think this is a larger problem that needs to be addressed and has not been addressed.
I heard it, when I was going to my own temple services, and I was told that this thing has happened. So we were glued to the TV since then, and we have noted. So the basic thing is that we have been misidentified because a lot of exposure to the extremists like Talibans and others, wearing turban and having a beard. And that exposure on the TV actually has allowed the other people to think that anybody who wears a turban is a Hezbollah, or he is a person who is a terrorist itself, Since 9/11, we have suffered a lot of onslaught from different people. We have used this opportunity to go out and meet the people, media, and governments, to tell them that we are different. We are not terrorists. We are not part of that terrorism. But we are different religion altogether, which is based on universality, brotherhood, and it is one who brings in the very, very dedicated people all over the world, coming from India and working hard and making money and making their own gurdwaras and sharing their wealth with all the people. Our gurdwaras, which are holding langars continuously, they feed millions of people every day all over the world. in one of the biggest temples we have in India at Amritsar, almost 10 to 15,000 people take food at one time. And it continues on certain occasions when there are big ceremonies. People to the tune of 100,000 people, they take this langar altogether. So langar has become a synonym for Sikh religion. Anytime there are earthquakes, there are tsunamis, there are anything, the Sikhs are the first to go there and start serving food to the people. And langar has become that institution which is so important. But besides that, we recite the name of the God, we sing the hymns, and we appreciate, we do the social work. Every person is obliged to do the work for the langar, for the seva, for the cleaning of the temple, and all this is a part of the psyche of a Sikh, that he does a lot of seva, service to the people, to the humanity, and to themselves.
So David Weigel, appreciate you being part of the show as well. I mean, you've been writing about what happened there and the and who this man was. And tell us a bit about what you've been investigating.
I think the basic thing is we have been misidentified.
No. I'm sorry. I'm talking about it was just that to Mr. Weigel, David Weigel.
Well, yeah, just the suspect here has been pretty thoroughly identified as a white supremacist. He, in photos that reveal some of his body, he's got body art that has the Celtic cross. He's got body art that has a reference to the 14 words that all white supremacists say they believe is a creed. He's been pictured with a swastika flag, and he was a member for a while. Apparently, a pretty frustrated member of white power, or I guess hate core is the term we sometimes use to refer to it. White power bands with lyrics about taking back America from all manner of from the Zionist occupied government, from all manner of threats. And if this stuff continues to bear out, I mean, the Southern Poverty Law Center was sort of first on the case because they monitor these bands, these groups. If this stuff keeps panning out, I think it's going to take a few days to suss out the degree to which he was involved in this stuff before he might have picked up the gun. I noticed today, and other people researching this today, noticed that the online services that for white supremacists have been kind of frantically getting rid of any information that might connect him to them.
To
you know, Stormfront.org and to other kind of white supremacist websites. Because this is the first thing you saw on those websites, the first thing you see in any situation like this, basically, is a theory that it's a false flag attack, which is a term meaning something the government did, or some conspiratorial organization did in order to make your movement look bad. But the evidence, just from the guy's personal life, so argues that he was a white supremacist, that they're now kind of making sure you can't draw the ties between him and between what they do.
So Harjan, I want to come back to the white supremacist things that Dave was talking about, to kind of probe this a bit more. But just historically, one of the things that reading about the Sikh people and religion, people who are Punjabi for the most part, from the Punjab in India, I mean, in the 15th century, the religion and the culture began in almost opposition to Islam, to create a new world that came out of Hinduism, creating this religion that didn't exist before, in opposition to that.
I don't.
Is that correct?
I would not
incorrect?
Necessarily say that. I think you know, many Sikhs believe that it was sort of a revelation that Guru Nanak had, but I think Sikhism has also, even though it emerged as an opposition of really the caste system and social hierarchy of that time period, it is informed by Sufi poets, you know, Hindu poets, as well as Muslim poets.
So a melding
poets.
Of the two in some ways.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what I want to emphasize here very quickly is also that, you know, what is really insidious about this act of violence is it's really against people of color. And I don't think this person who is a white supremacist would have been able to, I mean, if he can identify the difference between, you know, Muslims and Sikhs, I think there's a larger problem here, which has to do with the problem of racial violence in this country. And, you know, even though he sort of might have misidentified Sikhs as terrorists or as being associated with Al-Qaeda, I think when this violence happens against Muslim communities as well, it should be called out and should be, you know, stated as problematic. And I think Sikhs, we also condone that as well.
So but David Weichel, that's part of what I think that needs to be kind of looked at here. Maybe this will begin a conversation and more investigation about white supremacist movements in America that we keep downplaying and are talking about a great deal, but the potential of violence from some who are veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan wars, that is something that we're really not talking about.
Well, yeah, and we need to know more about the motivations here. You don't want to make too major on the day, but just in the media coverage of this, I've seen a lot of misstatements about what Sikhs are, what they believe. I'm glad you have a guest on talking about this. It puts me in mind of the period right after the September 11th attacks, where Sikhs who have a completely different religion than the 9/11 hijackers were attacked in New York, and I think it's the simple reason is that in dress and in looks, I mean, if you are not very educated but you're basically pretty racist, it might look like your idea of what a Muslim might look at. Now, that was definitely, I'm describing the motivations of people who committed these crimes after 9/11. We don't know much more about Wade here.
But
coming back to the misconception that that Sikhism is basically against hatred against Islam, that's not true. Although the fifth guru and the ninth guru in hierarchy, they have been, they were massacred by the Muslims for not accepting the Islam. The thing is, the Sikhism basically is against the human right violations. They protect the human rights. So they say that anybody who preaches any religion should be permitted to preach that religion and not interfere with other persons. Unfortunately, at that time, the contemporary government was the Muslims, and Muslims at that time were converting most of the Hindus into Islam by force. And that is where the conflict actually started between Muslims and Sikhs. Not basically that Sikhs are against Muslim, because we have also in our Guru Granth Sahib, which is the holy book, there are references where they say that Islam is good, but the Islamists have to be good themselves, The person who believes in a religion must be honest to that religion also. So, the time period, we also fought against British, we also fought against other people, Whenever there have been human rights violations against the common public, the Sikhs rose and they picked up the arms and they fought it out. And otherwise, there's no animosity between the Sikhs and Muslims. The contemporary government at that time happened to the Muslim. That is why probably it happens to be understood by that way. So my basic concept is that what we believe is that everybody is allowed to pursue his religion without any force from anybody. And also, as human beings, we should respect all the religions and let other people thrive as we are thriving ourselves. So there's no conflict between Islam and Sikhism. Okay. But there is a difference between the governmental authorities and the human rights violations.
But the amazing thing, there appears to be, for the fifth largest religion in the world, there appears to be this wide gulf of understanding, even by learned people, about this religion. Mark, when we found out, we were at our regular family gathering on Sunday, and I have to tell you, I had to look it up to prove to people that Sikhs were not Muslims. Because everyone it was about 20 people, and they're like, oh, a Muslim temple's been attacked. And even reporters in their early reporting, when they were breaking the news, called it a Muslim temple until they were corrected. And then that education process over the last 24 hours. It's amazing. There is a lot of work for us to do. I'm not surprised that this suspect got it wrong, because there is this gulf of information that we don't know enough about this.
Not that
we've
gotten it right, had he killed Muslims.
Amen. You're 100% right.
No, you're right.
Let me just quickly speak to Mr. Kohli's point. I want to just differentiate, what he's referring to is the Mughal Empire at the time, in that his part of history in India and what used to be Pakistan and the larger subcontinent. But yes, you're absolutely right. There is a lot of misunderstanding and lack of knowledge, which the Sikh community is really trying to change. And I'm also trying to change through my work. I just, through making documentaries and showing it to people and trying to get them to understand. But I think part of the reason that people don't have this knowledge is also because the Sikh community has remained somewhat insular, and because they've been misunderstood and because they've been racially profiled for such a long period of time. And this goes back, you know, before even 9/11 attacks, back to the 1950s when, you know, some of the first Sikhs that arrived in the United States and North America were classified as Hindus. So there is misunderstanding and racial profiling, and that has, to a certain level, led the community to remain very insular. But I think that needs to be changed, and effort needs to be put forth on from both non-Sikhs and Sikhs alike to create more understanding, create more education, and create more dialogue overall.
So, David Weigel, before you, I know you have to go in a few minutes, but where do you take this next in terms of your investigation and writing?
Well, you know, in a situation like this, there are really good reporters on the ground who I think are close to the family members, close to neighbors physically, and are going to get a lot from them. I've been trying to contact people who might have known the suspect in the days when he played with the various bands. I mean, there's an interview I posted at Slate he did in 2010, where he mentions playing with a lot of now defunct hate horror bands, and they have, to no one's surprise, not talked yet. But I think there's going to just be on the sussing out his ideology before this is not going to be that difficult. Trying to figure out what he was going into his thinking as he went into that temple. I'm kind of leaving that to police here, because the people immediately who know him and have talked to the press so far have they follow the kind of the typical pattern where people didn't see anything coming. When I say typical, though, I mean there are some suspects like Jared Lee Loughner who commit a crime and then have no logical reason. No reason for what they're doing. It's best explained by schizophrenia. This suspect, based on really pretty easy to reach public knowledge, had a long running affiliations with kind of racist music, things that were organizations that were worried about the decline of white power in America, and I think that's going to continue to be relevant.
Well, we're going to take a brief break here and come right back. And when we do, we'll be joined by John Nichols from The Nation magazine. We'll go to our phone. It's Ernest in the West Side is the first caller up. We have other people calling in at 410-319-8888. We look at what happened, the tragedy that took place in Wisconsin. We'll be talking now also about the violence of extremism in America, guns in America, where we have to take this conversation next for all of us as an American community. I want to thank David Weigel, who does great work at the Slate magazine, for joining us here for the first half hour. I know you've got to run. It's been a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you.
And we'll come back with our guest, Anthony and I will. But on the way there, let me remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we want to remind you here, a local announcement, that if you're a nonprofit and would like to find out how to get your message out to WEAA's listeners, please join us for WEAA's Community Ascertainment Breakfast, Thursday, August 23rd, 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. at the James E. Lewis Museum of Art. It's your chance to meet hosts and producers and learn about our Community Cares program, PSA submission requirements, media partnerships, and more. There's no cost, but space is limited. For more information, please call Sandy Mallory at 443-885-4531. That's 443-885-4531.
I'll be there.
You'll be there.
I'll be there. Looking forward to it.
And we're now joined by John Nichols, political blogger and writer for The Nation, and among many other things. John, good to have you with us.
It's great to be with you.
Always good to have you with us. We are continuing to be joined here by Harjan Gill, assistant professor of anthropology at Towson University and producer of the documentary entitled Roots of Love on Sikh Hair and Turbans. Prabhjot Singh Kohli is still with us, secretary of the Guru Nanak Foundation of America, the oldest and largest Sikh Gurudwara, which is a temple here in the United States. 410-319-8888. John, let me just start off with you, if I might. And I know that Harjan wanted to say something on tales of what David was saying, but let me go to John and please jump in. I think there's a story here developing that we really, a lot of the media is talking about and kind of on the surface, we're not really jumping into, which A, has to do with the violence in America, access to guns, and some of the racist response to a changing America and to 9/11 that has kind of come together in moments like this. And it's a moment for us maybe to start contemplating this.
Well, I think that you're right to some extent, although I'd be careful about suggesting that we're talking about something new. I mean, America has always wrestled with these issues. It may take new forms. It may see different communities that are targeted. But it's also something that, to my mind, can safely be described as a constitutional crisis, because our country was founded, perhaps to a greater extent than anything else, on the principle of religious pluralism, on the view that this is a place where people of different faith traditions, different doctrines, different beliefs could come and worship in peace and security. And one of the things that has developed, especially as regards to the Sikh community, but other religious communities as well, is I think a failure to protect that commitment, a failure to live up to that commitment. And this is an affront to the Constitution. It's an affront to what Thomas Jefferson imagined in 1777 when he argued, when they were writing the Virginia statute on religious liberty, that it ought not reference merely Christians, that it needed to show respect for what he referred to as Mohammedans, for Hindus, for infidels, for people of all different faiths. And now, today, I think we have an awful lot of people in our political class who think that religious freedom only refers to a protection for, you know, some dominant religions to be able to discriminate against others. That's not what the founders intended. And I think that this moment makes a demand on our leaders, not just leaders on the right or the left, not just Democrats or Republicans, but the whole of the leadership, political leadership class of this country, to reacquaint itself with some core American values. When a religious community is as violently targeted as the Sikh community has been, and as frankly other religious communities have been, particularly Muslims in the aftermath of 9/11, it is absolutely appropriate and necessary for political leaders to speak out on a regular basis as consistently and aggressively as they do about a host of other issues. The failure to do so, I think, again, creates a constitutional crisis. And we have a constitutional value that is being disregarded at this point, and that is our commitment to religious pluralism.
John Nichols is the Washington chief correspondent for The Nation magazine. You were about to say something, John?
Yeah, I'm just actually, John has sort of touched on it, but I'll just echo that briefly. You know, it's really important for us to not simply classify this act as an act of senseless violence. You know, we know that the shooter knew exactly what was going on. He went into the Sikh temple on a Sunday morning, which is the time at which, you know, upwards of 300-400 people join in for the morning prayers. So he actually deliberately acted on that specific day. So it is a act of racial violence and violence against a religious community. And I'm actually I'm glad that people are referring to it as domestic terrorism, which is the word that has been used a lot in the media. And, you know, domestic terrorism is classified as the act of violence that is religiously or politically motivated. And I think this definition shows that Sikhs are citizens of the United States, and they must be protected, and any act of violence against them should be classified as such, as a form of terrorism. So, I think the other conversation that we really need to have as a community and as a society is the conversation about gun control. You know, 32 people are gunned down in this country every single day. So that's a conversation that we're not having, and I think that needs to happen at some point.
I think a lot of it is that we are so polarized, and our comfort level with the polarization has become almost embarrassing. And I remember, I think back to as we were talking during the break about the world, the community center that was going to be built close to the site of the World Trade Center,
right.
And the furor around the country of people weighing in. And the surprising conversation was so many political leaders saying, look, to make people comfortable, why don't we just move away from putting this here? And it's the exact opposite is the ideal of what America represents, that so-called discomfort, but expanding who we are as a people. And as John said, this is a long time. This conversation in different faces and different colors and different religions has gone on for so long. But, Mark, I remember we were watching an interview with Herman Cain when he was asked, would he have a Muslim in his cabinet? And he said no. And so we as a country have become so – it's hard to have conversations about guns and violence, about protecting the ideals that Jefferson and Franklin and Washington and all those stood for – when we're so uncomfortable being uncomfortable as a nation anymore. It's really, really heartbreaking that we found ourselves at this point.
And John Nichols, maybe I was just being too cautious when I opened the program when you came on here at the half point. I mean, what really I think it needs to be dealt with out here is that, there are a couple of things. I mean, one is that there is a violence on the right that we do not talk about for fear of the NRA, for fear of trying to be sectarian. People don't want to deal with it. And two, there was a report that I read this morning again that we did a story about in 2008 when the Southern Poverty Law Center did a report on and commented on the numbers of people in our armed forces, not the majority, not all of them. Let's not even go there saying that Mark Snyder is saying that, but a significant number of people in our armed forces who join, who come from very right-wing, racist, and often Christian organizations. Those things are not synonymous, but that is a reality. And we don't want to address it nor deal with it, and I think that's a kind of a frightening thing that we have to address.
Well, I think we have to be careful when we look at the armed forces in any kind of specific way, because it is, the armed forces are so diverse, the most diverse part of our society, actually. And just as there may be racists who join the armed forces, there are also disproportionate numbers of African Americans and other people of color. So what we should understand about the armed forces is not what happens within them. I mean, again, you'll have heard there's a thing. What is deeply, deeply troubling to me is what happens after people leave the armed forces. And we are a country that is very excited to send people off to war, but not very excited about taking care of people when they come home from war. And the fact of the matter is that anyone who is serious about Veterans Affairs will tell you that we dramatically underfund a variety of areas, both job creation, literally, looking at a job as a way that people get back into society or get connected with society, but also psychological care, basic medical care. We don't treat our veterans well. And so we should not be surprised when there are folks who have breakdowns, when there are folks who really do either go to the edge politically or personally. And so there's deeper problems here. But I think, again, it's easy to talk about the military. I think a societal problem is much more serious than that. Well, and I think our other guest was referencing it just a second ago. We have a society where it has become very acceptable to mold what was once would have been thought of as incredibly extreme statements about immigrants, people of different religions. And the fascinating thing is, this is new. This is unprecedented. In the early 1960s, when the John Birch Society was on the rise, taking extreme positions on the right, they were called out. They were specifically rejected, objected to, and condemned by leading conservatives in the country. William F. Buckley put a cover story on the front of National Review calling out, damning the John Birch Society. And I do not see that level of policing of the right by leading conservatives in America today. And I think it's a root of a lot of problems.
No, I agree with you completely, John, what you were just describing. And I guess what I was referring to earlier, and again, I'm not condemning the United States Armed Forces.
No, you're not.
And I've supported many people that have been through it, and veterans as well. But I'm talking about a report that came out in 2008, which was a chilling report put out by the FBI about white supremacist recruitment of military personnel since 9/11. And that part does exist, and I think we have to can't close our eyes to
totally
it.
Totally appropriate. That's
from our point of view, what I feel is that America as it was 50 years back is not the same America as it is today. There's a more violence. There's a more arms and ammunition freely available. And that is the one thing which is causing a lot of all these frustrations getting out of hand. And then with the help of so many weapons, you can go and kill as many people as you want to. And we wish that there should be some kind of an armed control as to a person can only have weapons which are necessarily needed by him for his protection and not for the destruction purposes, you know. A few weeks back, it was in a cinema that a person went in and he killed as many people as he could. So our feeling basically is that although America is a very advanced, very democratic country, and this religion of Sikhism is also based on democracy, we have given freedom to the woman 500 years back when, you see, today we are talking about freedom of sexism, you know. We gave freedom and equality to all the people who are nurtured there, irrespective of what they do and what caste they belong to. So all that democratic values are actually ingrained in the Sikhism, which actually is being performed in America. And we really appreciate that there was such a quick response in this case. And the officer, without caring for his life, he shot the shooter down. Otherwise, there would have been more casualties because there were only a few people were there. More people would have joined because by the time the services time comes to end, there are about 300 to 400 people in every gurdwara. So my feeling is that definitely we should control the arms.
And can I offer something here?
John Nichols, go ahead.
I think that there's something very vital. We are talking a great deal about the dark side of the storyline and the depressing parts of our circumstance today in America. And there's various issues that have to be dealt with, issues of violence, hatred, guns. But I think it's also important to recognize some of the truly inspiring things that we saw yesterday. An elderly Sikh gentleman, one of the founders of this temple, literally risking his life and being shot to try and protect younger people. A police officer in a traditionally Polish-American community rushing into a Sikh temple to try and save people. A Polish-American state legislator breaking down in tears at the sight of his constituents, these Sikh community members having been shot, because he cared and felt so connected to them. This is something that's important to understand.
Yes.
I do Twitter a lot, and I was tweeting yesterday a lot from Milwaukee. And I had the most retweeted tweet of my entire life, of all the time I've been on Twitter yesterday. And it was a simple one noting that in the afternoon after this horrible shooting, as people were still trying to figure out who had been shot, who had been not, who was alive, who was not, the Sikh community, the members of this temple, reorganized themselves, found a way to go and get some food and get water, and reappeared delivering food and water to the police, the firefighters, and people from the community that had gathered because of the Sikh tradition of hospitality and generosity to those who are at the temple. And, you know, I just sent a little tweet about that. Almost 3,000 people retweeted it. It wasn't because I did it. It was because people saw an act of tremendous humanity, of tremendous decency, pluralism. And I think that this is something that it's the flip side. It's the good side of this horrible tragedy. Americans are learning about a religion that not many Americans know about, but that has been a part of this country for the better part of 200 years. And at our best, we are responding with the joy, with the embrace that Thomas Jefferson intended. We are to be a country of many religions and of great regard for one another. And I do think that it's important to emphasize that we saw that side of America yesterday as well. And it is, if we could find one good thing to have come out of yesterday, it is that.
That's a very important thing you just said. I want to open the phone to some of our listeners, and I've neglected to do here and should have them join us for a minute. 410-319-8888. One of the things we did today when we went out was to reach out to my Sikh friends in the city, and they were kind enough to introduce us to Prabhjot Singh Kohli, who joins us this afternoon, and Harjan Gill, who's in the studio with Anthony McCarthy and I with John Nichols, Washington correspondent for The Nation, who's also associated with Capital Times in Madison, Wisconsin. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Ernest, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hey, Ernest.
Hi, Ernest.
Yeah. Well, the Sikhs have been under attack since the Mughals and the British Raj. They are very peaceful people. They are not prejudiced. They welcome everybody, white, black, oriental, and they're all over the world. Now, we try to give the impression that the Founding Fathers were such a great people. The Founding Fathers was criminals, and they exterminated the Native Americans, and they enslaved African Americans and Chinese Americans. So they don't care about. And the other thing is that the Sikhs has been under attack since 9/11, but the federal government has not brought it out to say that these people are not Muslim. They are Sikhs. They are very peaceful, and they're not involved in any kind of violence. Never have they said that. So to believe that this guy, he made a mistake, he knew exactly what he was doing. And what the mistake he did was to shoot that police officer. When he shot that police officer, he called for his death because he was going to be killed no matter what. So this Founding Father, I wonder where the people in this country, especially black people, come with this Founding Father stuff. And they were so, and they are so good about religion and things. No, this is not the America. Hey, and to my Sikh brothers, as long as white people keep trying to perpetrate this fraud on you, you're going to always have problems. What you have to do is to have high guards or something to be outside your temples to make sure the people that go inside your temples are safe.
All right, and let me. I want to hear a response both from the Sikh brothers in the studio here with us and also from John Nichols. Let me start with John Nichols, then go to Harjan and Mr. Kohli. John, the contradictions of our Founding Fathers.
They're deep and fundamental. And one cannot talk about the Founding Fathers as a group. I think we begin with the understanding that it's problematic that they were the Founding Fathers. they weren't Founding Fathers and Mothers. I think there's also the problematic reality that our caller references, the acceptance of the original sin of the American experiment, human bondage. By the same token, I tend to agree with Dr. King that the genius of the founders was that they were terribly imperfect players who imagined routes to something better. And I think Jefferson is probably the embodiment of that, a slaveholder who knew that holding slaves was wrong. A guy who again and again seemed to try to do something better and then fall back, really a tragic story in himself, And yet, on this issue of religious pluralism, his writings are so very striking. There was an attempt in, when Virginia was writing its religious freedom statute to include the reference to followers of Jesus Christ. And Jefferson fought to avoid having that there and succeeded on the argument, and he was very specific about this, that America must be a country of all religions, all faith traditions, and specifically went beyond Christianity, beyond Judaism, to reference Islam and to reference Hinduism and other religions. And I visited his library. I've been stunned by the fact that he collected and read the great religious texts of all religions and incorporated that into his writings about America. I just circle around to say that I think that we can condemn many of the founders. I happen to really like Tom Paine, but many of the founders are certainly worthy of criticism. By the same token, I think that it is important as we talk about America to find those elements in the founders and those elements in the Constitution that we ought to defend and be serious about. And to my mind, there's a clear original intent that this be a pluralistic country as regards religion, that this country welcome all religious communities, and that a true welcome to any religious community must begin with the assurance that they are safe from threats and violence when they seek to worship. That promise was not kept on Sunday. And we as a people ought to be talking about what we should do as regards guns, as regards violence, as regards hate speech, as regards all of these concerns. What should we do as a country to assure that one of our best founding commitments to religious pluralism is maintained?
That's a very important thing John was just going to point out. We spent another hour just to kind of wrestle with this. We'll have to do this another day just to talk about all this, I think, in its complexity. But, Harjan, you wanted to say something in response to what Ernest was saying as well.
I think John did a pretty good job of addressing that. The only thing that I'd like to add to that is that, as the caller talked about, even if this has happened to a Muslim community, it would have been problematic and something that we should all condemn as Americans. And we really need to look forward to the kind of society and community that we want to live in and promote understanding. And I think this issue of hiring guards or putting metal detectors in front of the Sikh Gurdwara is very contradictory to the Sikh philosophy and to our faith. You know, if you go into a Sikh temple in India or even in the United States in many parts, they're open 24/7. They're never closed. And that's the idea of house of worship, is that it's never closed. You can go and worship there any time of the day. You can have meal there. And, that would just go against to let some people in and not other people in would be going against that openness and acceptance. And I think we need to really, as a society now, need to come together and move forward and promote more tolerance and acceptance.
Mr. Coley, we only have like a minute and a half left, and I'd like to have you to say a few words and let Anthony close.
I would say that basically this is against our tenets, that there should be metal detectors or there should be some kind of security to protect the people. The biggest temple of ours, which is in India at Amritsar, people come in thousands and thousands, and there's not even a single person belonging to the law enforcement agencies working in that. Everything is voluntary. People are looked after voluntarily. There are people who work. So it is against our tenets that there should be metal detectors or there should be kind of a restrictions for the people to enter in. We are open to everybody. Anybody from any caste, any creed, any religion is most welcome to come and join us in our services and also join at the food. And therefore, I don't think that it is a good idea to put in those kind of detectors. What I feel is that probably there should be some control on the arms. Sikhs have a right to bear arms. This is not only given by Guru, but it has been given by all the world governments. So Sikhs can carry a dagger of 4 to 6 inches on his person whenever he is traveling all over the world.
Let me,
Mr. Goli, I'm sorry, we're just about out of time.
It is a personal weapon. So what I'm saying is that when you have the person weapons of mass destruction, that is going to create all kind of deception. If he had a only personal weapon, he could kill one or two people and he can get caught, you know. But if he has a
I'm sorry, Mr. Scully, we're really just almost out of time. Harjot wants to have a quick announcement.
So that's I'm just saying that we should not restrict the entry to this.
I just want to say I want to say thank you to all the people who have come out in support of the Sikh community, and we really appreciate the support in this time of grieving for the loss that the Sikh community in Wisconsin has experienced. There are candlelight vigils that are happening at Sikh temples throughout the week. Today, from 7 to 8:30, there's a Sikh temple in Randallstown in Maryland here near Baltimore. I encourage people to go out and support the community and go in for some of these services. Go in on the weekend and enjoy the langar and show your support.
Always great to be with you, Mark.
Anthony McCarthy,
very important
so
discussion.
I'm glad you were with us. I want to thank Prabhjot Singh Kohli, Secretary of the Guru Nanak Foundation of America, for joining us. I appreciate everything you've contributed to this conversation. Lovely to meet you, Harjot Gill. I look forward to seeing your documentary and having you back.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much. Assistant Professor of Anthropology at Taos University. Of course, John Nichols, Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. If you're a first or second-time home buyer looking for a home in the city of Baltimore, 1-800-638-7781. They have a great deal of money to help you with. 1-800-638-7781. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Justin Levy. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts, which we'd like to hear. To hear the show again on podcast and for our past shows, and to hear new additional interviews, please visit on the web at steinershow.org and information about our guests and our work. Stay tuned now for our Marsha Reeves Jews and keeping it moving. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.